Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
At Vuse, we're vapor done right. Always simple. Always in your pocket. So you can focus on what really matters. Like getting back to your podcast. Find out more at Vuse.com. That's Vuse.com.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Got a great show today, folks. I teased you a little bit yesterday with a little bit of a, let's just say, it's not a white lie, not a fib, but I misled you a little bit by saying that our guest today used AI to find God. He did use AI in the way he made his movie today. And he did find God, but he found it in the most unusual way. He found it through science. My guest today is a wonderful guest and a guest that, believe it or not, I grew up watching on television. I loved news shows as a kid. And believe it or not, I won a couple of current events contests as a youngster. I was a bit of a nerd. I'll give you that. So I always had my eye on television. And one of the TV stations I had my eye on as a child was the ABC affiliate here in town. And Dr. Michael Gillen is with us today, and he has a wonderful new movie out there that I got a chance to screen this week. And it's going to be an interesting conversation today, because this isn't the first time we've had this conversation, but it's the first time we've had this conversation with a man of science. I've had this conversation with a man of God before, and it's an interesting conversation, and I'll get to the introduction here in just a moment, and we'll go from there. But it's a conversation talking about how science can lead you to God, which is an unusual way of putting things, because normally those two don't mix. Science is science and very much logical. God is spiritual, and that's the other side of the pendulum, isn't it? But we'll try to put those two together today with our guest, Dr. Michael Gillen. Dr. Michael Gillen's a world-class scientist and communicator. He holds a PhD from Cornell in physics, astronomy, and mathematics. For years, he was an award-winning physics instructor at Harvard University and the Emmy award-winning science editor for ABC News. He appeared regularly on Good Morning America, World News Tonight, Nightline, and 2020. He has authored many best-selling books, including Believing is Seeing and Five Equations That Changed the World. He is the author of More Than Meets the IQ on Substack and host of the popular podcast Science and God with Dr. G. He produced the award-winning family film Little Red Wagon, distributed by Lionsgate, and is now playing on Amazon Prime and other major streaming platforms. The documentary that we're talking about today is a groundbreaking AI-generated documentary that will be appearing on the website on, I believe, April 8th, right, Dr. G?
Yes, sir.
That's right. And it is, why is it escaping me now what the name of the title of the movie is? The title of
the Invisible Everywhere.
That's right, The Invisible Everywhere. And it's available at theinvisibleeverywhere.com. I believe it's The Invisible Everywhere, Believing is Seeing, right? Name of the movie?
That's the right. Full title of the movie is absolutely right. It's The Invisible Everywhere, Believing is Seeing, and it's going to premiere worldwide April 8th on theinvisibleeverywhere.com. You got it, Tim. You got it,
there
man.
You go. Dr. Michael Gillen, thank you so much for joining us today. Let's open up with this. Now, you know, I find you start out the movie with your background, which is incredibly fascinating, and that is from the word go, you're enamored with science so much that you named your dog Kepler, which I thought was incredibly endearing.
You know, I fell madly in love with science in the second grade. I can't explain why. It's a fact. And at that point, I just became this kind of quintessential scientific geek. I mean, the kind you see in movies, but I was the real deal. And, you know, I decided that the proper motto for any would-be scientist should be believing is seeing. You know, that's the proper skeptical motto. And so I adopted that for my own. You know, if I couldn't see it, I couldn't believe it. And was the, you know, show me, prove it to me, that kind of an attitude that I had. And the other feeling that I had was that logic was superior to faith. Faith for me was this kind of nebulous. What is that? Logic, I could tell you, you know, the Aristotelian laws of logic are, you know, I knew them backwards and forwards. I would do the syllogisms and all the rest of it. But, you know, faith was this kind of very, you know, woo-woo type of fuzzy concept. So that just wasn't part of my life. I wasn't hostile about it, but, you know, the whole concept of having faith in an invisible God kind of went completely against everything that I was trying to be as a young man. I wanted to be a scientist, and I just felt that I had to be very pragmatic, very down to earth, very logical. And anything other than that, it just was extra baggage, and I just sloughed it off. So that was me as a young man. Yeah.
The one thing I think the comfort in science, again, is that in order to prove something in a lab, you have to, and for it to be scientific and scientific method, you have to be able to prove it again and again. You have to get the same result, correct?
Yeah. And I don't like using the word proof. Oftentimes people will, especially atheists, will challenge me. Well, you know, you believe in God, prove it. In my book, Believing is Seeing, I really take a deep dive into the concept of proof and what is proof and what constitutes real proof. And, you know, we don't have time to get into it all here, but it's in the book. And but the headline is this. The closest thing you have really in life to actual proof is mathematics. You don't, in science, you don't really prove things. You can demonstrate things. You can illustrate things. You can replicate it, which is what you're referring to, trying to repeat a result over and over again. And that kind of begins to resemble proof. But even then, it's like Einstein said, you know, one experiment can demolish years and even decades of evidence. You know, we believe something has been proven, like, you know, classical physics, Newtonian physics reigned supreme for more than 200 years. And yet we found, you know, in the early 1900s, when Einstein came out with his special and general theories of relativity, it was disproven. That is to say, Newtonian physics was disproven. It was replaced by something else. But even in mathematics, even there, where you really come very close to a proof, you know, like you probably remember in high school, if you were taking geometry, your teacher would require you to prove certain geometric theorems, like the Pythagorean theorem or the, you know, all the theorems involved with parallel lines that are cut by a transversal. Remember, alternate interior angles. Remember, am I bringing back?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Am I bringing back?
There's
my memory.
A lot of nightmares. Right? A lot of nightmares here, Dr. G. Yeah.
For most people, it is. But even there, like, let's just take Euclidean geometry, where, you know, you have this kind of classic proof. What people don't realize is that you have to accept more than two dozen assumptions that Euclid made in order to practice geometry. So even though you may not be aware of it, your subconscious may not be aware of it. When you do a proof like proving the Pythagorean theorem, you're actually assuming certain things, and that proof only holds up if you are willing to assume certain truths. For example, I'm going to give you three assumptions that Euclid made that are really out of this world. They're crazy. Okay. Number one, he said, let us define a mathematical point as something that has no dimensions, no height, no width, no depth. Well, right off the bat, you should alarm bells should be going off in your head. You're like, wait a minute, a mathematical point has no dimensions, and yet it's something. You're asking me to believe right off the bat, and this is Euclidean geometry. We're not even talking about God or religion. Right. We're talking about plain geometry. Euclid is asking you to believe something that is outrageous. How can something have absolutely no dimensions and be something? And yet that's exactly the definition of a mathematical point. And then he extends that and he says, well, if you take an infinite number of these nothings, which are really somethings, you get a line. So a line is something that has length, but it has no width and no depth. And then you extend that and you define a plane, and a plane is something that, you know, an infinite number of lines laid side by side. So it has width that hath depths, but it has no height. So the whole, think about that. What I'm saying to you is the whole of Euclidean geometry, this magnificent mathematical edifice that we all learn in high school, is based on assumptions that are really out of this world. They're ridiculous.
Yeah.
They don't make any sense. And yet Euclidean geometry is entirely based on them. So that was when I was teaching myself geometry, I didn't really see it. I didn't see that kind of profundity. It wasn't until much later on, but little by little, the more I dove into math, the more I dove into physics, the more I dove into astronomy, the more of these examples I began to discover that my tidy concept of the world as being very logical, very pragmatic, very materialistic. I only believe what I can see. What I see is all there is. It just began fragmenting. It just began crumbling. Until by the time I got to grad school, I was really in a kind of a crisis, and we can talk about that if you want.
Sure, yeah. In fact, let's talk about that crisis real quick. Let me draw a quick parallel here for people, as far as what you were bringing up with Euclidean geometry and the beginning of your journey, and then we'll go back to your crisis here, because there's an interesting point that I want to bring up. Much like your point about Euclidean geometry, you also bring up in the movie an interesting point about space and the universe, in that there's, and you bring up the point with a bell jar and in a vacuum. And you talk about the vacuum of space, yet there's this vacuum of space, but yet you have these burning stars, you have these planets that exist, you have life that exists in a vacuum. So you've got this huge conundrum. How does all this exist in a vacuum? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're referring to something we call the quantum vacuum, mm-hmm. which by definition, and here again, it's almost shades of Euclid, where Euclid was asking you to believe in something that is absolutely preposterous and contradictory. Quantum mechanics asks you to believe in something called the quantum vacuum, which is both nothing, a perfect nothing, and a perfect everything. So again, alarm bells have to go off in your brain and you say, whoa, wait a minute. And yet, you know, the current modern theory of cosmology, and cosmology is one of my specialties, but, you know, the inflationary Big Bang theory, which is the kind of the current flavor of theory that we have to explain the beginnings of the universe, at least scientifically, is based on this really weird concept. Again, like Euclidean geometry is based on the idea of a mathematical point that has no dimensions. So, yes, the quantum, boy, we could do a whole hour, Tim, on the quantum vacuum,
sure.
But the concept of the quantum, look, let's go back, let me explain it to you this way, because I know our time is limited. Mm-hmm. Go back to the 1920s, like the late 1920s, when Edwin Hubble, who was a lawyer turned amateur astronomer, made this amazing discovery that the galaxies were spreading apart from one another, that the inference of that was that the universe was somehow expanding, not just the galaxies, but literally space and time itself. The matrix which holds these galaxies, it itself is expanding. That was huge, because if you extrapolate backwards, then the implication is that the universe had a beginning. That if you extrapolate this, if you run the expansion backwards, it must imply that the universe started in some condensed state, some very condensed state, maybe even a mathematical point. Mm-hmm. And so this threw cosmologists into a frenzy from which they have not yet recovered. And, you know, I talked about my personal crisis, but cosmology is in a crisis right now, trying to explain how it is that a universe can come into being from nothing, right? That's right. Basically what you have to explain. before Hubble's discovery, there was no problem because we adopted basically the Aristotelian concept that the universe we see today has always existed. It's always existed and it will always exist. So there was no, you didn't have to worry about a beginning. But this, but after 1929 and into the 40s, when we cosmologists, I wasn't born then, but I'm speaking collectively, we cosmologists, we're faced with a real problem. How do we explain an entire universe, life and all, coming into being, having a beginning of some kind, presumably from nothing? Because if it doesn't come from nothing, you have to explain where that something came from initially. So, you know, the only rational assumption is, okay, well, you start with a blank slate. There's no space, there's no time, there's no gravity, there's no mass, there's no energy. So your homework is, all right, take that blank slate and now create an entire universe that's populated not only with galaxies and stars and solar systems, but with living creatures. And that's proven to be a real problem. And the quantum vacuum is their best shot. They're like, well, we have to start with nothing, right? Well, why don't we, by definition, make this nothing into everything? Ah, yeah, yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. Something that's both nothing and everything. And I'm being somewhat facetious.
Sure,
and,
yeah. But
it really is true. I mean, facetious or not, I mean, that is, in fact, where we are in cosmology. We're stuck. We're discombobulated by this notion that the universe had a beginning. And there are some cosmologists that say, well, it didn't really need to have a beginning. And so they come up with things like imaginary time. You know, Stephen Hawking did that before he died, and all this sort of thing. But it's all hand waving, as we would call. And it's, and it gets even weirder when you do that. Because when you say, well, it didn't have a beginning, really, there's imaginary time. Well, then what's imaginary time? In other words, no matter what cosmologists do, bend over backwards, trying to explain how you get a universe from nothing, their response and their reply and their best foot forward is just, it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. So here we are. I realized that when I was a grad student, and that was part of my crisis. When I realized that cosmological crisis, it became my personal crisis because I had staked my entire life on science, on logic, on believing that what I see is all there is. And I discovered, ooh, that's really not the case.
Right. And, you know, we'll jump into that for a second. But let me ask you this question here, Dr. G. Is it that... Just to jump back for a quick second here, do we need a beginning as humans? Do we need a linear explanation for why we are?
Well, I mean, you could become very philosophical and say somehow we are eternal creatures, that somehow we had precursors that were, you know, that were eternal. I mean, I always think of questions like that, which involve time, as a timeline that stretches to positive infinity and negative infinity. Mm-hmm. So your choices are either there are really only two reasonable answers to that question. Either we've been around forever in some form or another, right? In other words, we've occupied the timeline from negative infinity to positive infinity. So explain that. Or you have to believe that we started at time t equals zero. Any other point on the timeline you pick is arbitrary. Why would you say, well, we showed up at t equals plus one or plus two? So, yeah, I think that without getting too philosophical, sure, because you can get lost in the weeds. And right, your question is a very good one and a very deep one, is that for the most part, all of the scientific evidence we have right now is that the universe had a beginning. The question is, what caused that beginning? What triggered that beginning? And what existed before the beginning, if anything? And if you believe nothing predated the beginning of the universe, then, okay, that's fine. You have to explain how you get something from nothing. Or you can take the alternative point of view and just say, no, something has always existed. And it kind of then burped out this universe that we see now. And that's kind of That's kind of what the quantum vacuum theory is. Not exactly that, but it's kind of that. That the quantum vacuum is a kind of eternal thing. It's been around forever, and that at some random point it just burped and out came this universe. But again, you're stuck with explaining, well, where did the quantum vacuum come from? If it's an eternal structure, where did it come from? You see, you see the problem you get into whenever you're talking about origins. Origins are a big problem for science, whether it's the origin of the universe or origin life on Earth. I mean, we take good stabs. We have, you know, modern Darwinism, modern evolutionary biology. We have modern cosmology. We have modern, you know, theory of particle physics and all that sort of thing. But when you dig deep the way I have, I mean, I've spent my entire life studying this stuff. You begin seeing real holes, big holes in the reasoning. And that was disillusioning for me. And that was the crisis that launched me into my spiritual journey when I was about 1 or 2 years into my grad school. Yeah.
That's an interesting age, and I'll tell you this much. We may take our break early because I see your crisis as a double-headed crisis, not only a crisis of what you believed in science, but a crisis of faith, because really, atheism is a faith. Whether atheists want to believe it or not, it is. You even bring up in the movie the little book of atheist spiritualism, which... I don't think most people who consider themselves a devout atheist even know that that book exists.
I know. It's a very famous book among about 17% of atheists. But yeah, it's the little book of atheist spirituality. And it's a bestseller among, you know, that crowd. But you're right. I'm glad you picked up on that. I do think it's a crisis of faith because honestly, you know, when I was an atheist and I didn't think this through because I was still young, and it wasn't until, as I say, I got to grad school where, you know, my brain was becoming fully formed. You know, your brain doesn't fully form until about 26 years old. But up before then, as an atheist, I just said, yeah, I'm an atheist. I don't, you know, God, I don't, I was never a hostile atheist. God just wasn't on my radar. I just loved science. Science was my God. Science was my everything. I lived, breathed science. To the exclusion of everything, including the social life. But what I realized later on, and this is what you're alluding to, Tim, is the role of faith in all this journey that I've been on. As I said to you initially, I kind of poo-pooed it as being fuzzy and wuzzy, and you know, I don't know, what is faith? And but what I discovered is that faith is a necessary prerequisite to any healthy worldview. I mean, you can't even get out of bed without having faith that when you put your foot on the floor, you're not going to fall through, you know, to the center of the earth. And I know that sounds trivial, but it's not trivial. If you think about your average day, things like I'm having faith that I'm actually talking to another human being. I don't know. I can't touch you. We're doing this through, you know, Zoom. But yeah. I have faith you're a real person. You're asking serious questions. Same with you know, me. You don't know if I'm real. We've never met. But so in a million and one ways, we rely on faith in order to get through our day.
Yes.
And one of the things that I discovered was, wow, you know what? I need to have faith in the scientific method in order to be a scientist. If I don't have faith in the scientific method, that is to say, if I don't believe in my heart of hearts, that if I follow the scientific method, it'll lead me to something trustworthy. If I don't have that much faith in the scientific method, I can never be a scientist. And so atheists who say, well, I don't have faith, well, that's nonsense, as you point out, because atheists love to define themselves only for what they don't believe. Because by definition, atheism means you don't believe in God or some spiritual being. Okay, that's fine. Set that aside. What do you believe? What do you believe? Okay. And whatever it is you believe, however you fill in that blank, it requires faith, right? But they, you know, say that to the average atheist and they'll just, you know, they'll erupt on you. I found in my experience.
What do you,
but yes, that's, I think faith has a very important role in the journey I've been on.
What do you say to, and before we go to break, I need to know this answer because I was thinking about this before we got together today. What do you say to the average layman atheist when they tell you, I don't believe in anything other than you die and you rot in the ground?
Yeah, well, that's their prerogative. But Look, the way I answer it is this way. That steady worldviews, and there are three things about a worldview that matter. In other words, everyone's worldview is defined by three parameters. Number one, its foundation. Those are the things you assume in life that you may not be aware that you're assuming. You may be assuming these subliminally or subconsciously, but your worldview rests. Think of your worldview as a bubble that rests on a foundation of some kind. That foundation are all the assumptions you make in life. Okay. And you probably don't interrogate yourself to find out what those assumptions are, but you should. The other parameter is the diameter of your worldview, the diameter of your bubble. How big is your worldview? We'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
And the third parameter is the center of the bubble. Whatever is at the center of your bubble, that's your God. Everything in your worldview revolves around that one thing. Maybe it's you. Maybe you're so egotistical, you're your own God. You know, and I find in many, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but in my experience with atheism, I think a lot of atheists deify their minds. Their minds are their God. It's the central point of their worldview. But to answer your question, it's the diameter. If I believe that life is nothing more than, as Stephen Hawking said, a computer, you somehow come into being, you live out your lifespan, and then you die, and then it's over, just into the junkyard. Rotting pile. Well, that's fine. You're entitled that, but that defines your worldview, and your worldview has got a very small diameter. If that's all, if your entire worldview, if your entire perception of reality boils down to that, it's like the honey. I shrunk my worldview down to just that. Right. And what I found in my journey is I started out with a relatively small worldview because I said, you know what? What I see is all there is. So right away, that it made my worldview the size of maybe a one room studio apartment. OK.
Yeah.
And then as I began studying the universe and life and all these other bigger questions that we're talking about today, my worldview began expanding, you know, like the Grinch's heart. It grew and grew and grew. Now I realize my worldview is large enough to include things that I cannot see, that are not logical, that are not even imaginable. That's quite a large worldview, and I'm quite comfortable with that. And guess what? Science and Christianity, which is the religion I ended up believing after going through Hinduism and all the others, are defined by that larger worldview. Because as I explain in the movie, even science admits that 95% of the universe is invisible to us. So you need to have a very large worldview beyond what you can see. But if your life boils down to, hey, you live, you die, and that's it, you get a real... You've got a worldview whose diameter is microscopic. And God bless you. Good luck with that. I don't care. Look, I'm not out to change anybody's mind. Honestly, Tim, I'm really not. Not with the movie. I don't preach. I'm
right,
just sharing my journey with people. That's it. Take it or leave it.
You know, you're very right about that, Dr. Gillen. You know, it's interesting because as I sat and watched the movie, you're not beating anybody over the head with any opinions as far as religion goes or as far as religious belief goes. You're pointing out how science lines up to show you that there is more to this life than what people expect. And in fact, science even points out the reasons why there's an afterlife. And the most interesting thing, I think, which hit me right between the eyes, and you just brought it up, the fact that most of the universe is made up, if not all, except for 5%, is made up of dark matter and dark energy. And then there's that 5% that's that light cone. And we live in that light cone.
Inside of it. Yeah, I know. It's just this kind of wedge-shaped, tiny wedge-shaped portion of reality. I mean, you know, when you go to a shopping mall, you see these maps of the mall. And there's an arrow that says you are here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the movie, I show that. But it's not a map of the mall. It's a map of reality, a whole of space time. And when you look at that map, I explain in the movie what tiny portion we're in. And I think That's what was for me so life-changing. When I started out as a kid with this tiny little worldview, you know, what I see is all there is, logic is where it's at, faith is nonsense. And as I matured as a scientist, because I wasn't religious at all until the tail end of my life, really. Mm-hmm. And the movie is all about how science just dramatically changed my worldview. Science, not the Bible, not anything. That's why it doesn't preach. It's just all about science. What has science discovered about the universe, about life, about the human spirit, about death, and so forth? And it's these discoveries that ended up changing me like dramatically. But you're absolutely right. I don't believe in preaching because I think it's kind of counterproductive. I have a Gen Z son, and I've made it a point not to preach to him. I feel like he's entitled to his own life.
Sure.
He's on his own journey. He's got to make his own discoveries. My only advice to him, his son, ask tough questions and demand honest answers. And that has really been my guiding light throughout my life. And even now that I'm older, I still live by that motto. Ask tough questions, mm-hmm. demand honest answers. And if you do that, then I feel that it will lead you to truth. And that's what it's done for me. And for me, it was science. Science is what led me to the truth. And instead of pointing away from God, lo and behold, much to my shock, it actually pointed toward God. And that's really what the movie is about. How in the world does science point someone to God? And again, it's just factual. I just deal with the modern scientific discoveries, and the conclusion is inescapable. I mean, there's just no way of escaping it. You can disagree with it, but the conclusion is extremely compelling and changed my life forever.
Yeah. Such an interesting conversation. I tell you what, we'll take our break here, Dr. G. When we come back, I've got a couple of things I want to bring up with you. One, the U.S. government's about to spill supposedly about aliens, but you've got a different outlook on it in this movie. We'll talk about that when we come back. Two, you might have solved what psychic powers are in this movie. You bring it up very early in the movie, and you use your dog as an example. And I find it interesting. And it has everything to do with the quantum world. So we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm struggling to remember what the term is, but you'll bring it up for me, I know. But we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll talk about the reality of psychic powers, and is there such a thing, or is it a quantum thing? I want to talk to you about that and see what you think. And we'll talk more about this wonderful world of science and how it translates to the other side. And I want to get your opinion about that as well. Is heaven really a quantum realm? I want to talk to you about that as well, Dr. G. Dr. Michael Gillen is our guest. The movie is a wonderful one, folks, and it comes out April 8th. We'll have a link to it in the description of this program. The Invisible Everywhere, Believing is Seeing. And I encourage you to go see it the moment it comes out. I encourage you, as a matter of fact, to go see it the moment it comes out. It's got so much useful information in it, folks, and I think you guys are going to see it. No matter if you're an atheist, no matter if you're a believer, whatever you believe, you'll get so much useful tidbits out of it that it'll make you think. That's for sure. It made me think for sure. When we come back, more with Dr. Michael Gillen, and we'll answer those questions with Dr. G when we come back right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest is Dr. Michael Gillen. The name of the movie, The Invisible Everywhere, Believing is Seeing. And it comes out April 8th at theinvisibleeverywhere.com. We'll have a link in the description of this program so you can go see that wonderful movie when it comes out. I'm just going to tell you I saw it twice. I liked it so much. I saw
it. I've seen it 100 times. I've seen it a hundred times,
Dr.
I'll be
Gillen.
Honest with you. I still, even I who made the movie, I got to tell you, I'm still affected by it. It affects me very deeply. And it is a beautiful movie. I put my heart and soul into it for more than a year. It's visually stunning. The content is solidly scientific. Mm-hmm. It's just my journey from atheism to believing in God and how science is the one who pointed me in that direction, much to my surprise. Yeah. So thank you for that. Thank you for that, Tim.
What impressed me, Dr. G, is this, that you used what you could with AI at the time. I'm good friends with Josh Gates, who has come out with a new show called The Expedition Files. The first episode airs on April 1st. And he's managed to do something. I got a hold of a screener of that. And he's managed to do something with big time studio budget money with AI, where he can insert himself with AI into a historical scene, which is amazing. I almost wish you could have done that with this movie. As I was watching the movie, I almost wanted to see you inserted into some of the historical scenes that you have dreamscapes that in this movie, I almost wanted to see you inserted into them. But you managed.
That would have been cool. That would have been cool. You know, one of the exciting things for me about this movie, because initially, Tim, you may not know this, but initially when I wrote the script for this movie, we had it budgeted, and it was going to be costing us probably on the order of $10 million, which is about what my previous movie cost. So I wasn't too surprised, but I knew this movie would be heavy on special effects. And so it would cause the budget to go up. And that was my intention until February 25th of last year. And I had this weird experience at about 4 a.m. And again, I don't want to get weird on you, but the February 25th, about 4 a.m., I was still in bed. It was still dark. And I just had this impression that I was supposed to make this movie in an unconventional way. In fact, what I sensed was that I was supposed to make this movie with my iPhone camera. And it was just the weirdest thing, because I wasn't even thinking about it. We were already in the process of finding the investors. We had a great script. And I texted a friend of mine and said, this is what just happened. He says, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I just feel like this is how I'm supposed to do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I thought of Kanye West making a music video with his iPhone camera. So I thought, okay, well, I suppose it's possible.
Yeah.
I'll have to get a new iPhone because I have a real old model. But about a week or so after that, I started noticing online references to these AI generators that were becoming publicly available just for like $99 a year. And at that time, it was Runway and there was Kling. Not much more than that.
Yep.
And so one day I just remember experimenting with it. I'm a scientist, so I thought, well, let me give it a shot. I knew nothing about these things. And it spit out a visual that just blew me away. And I thought, wow, a little bulb went off my head. I said, what do you think? You think it's possible I can make an entire full-length motion picture this way, 5 seconds at a time, with a publicly available AI generators? And I rolled up my sleeves and I said, let's do it. Let's try. Again, I'm a scientist, so I'm always for experimenting. The bolder, the better, right?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I worked my tail off for like 12-hour days for an entire year. And what happened was that the AI generators in the process were getting better and better and better during that time. I was really riding the crest of a wave, to the point where we now believe, and we've interrogated the various chatbots about this, but it looks like I am the first person in history to make a full-length motion picture by myself on a desktop computer using publicly available consumer-level AI generators. Your friend, yeah, I mean, there are studios right now that are making AI movies, but they're budgeted for $20, $30 billion, and they have big studios behind them, casts of 100. It was just little old me in this room, right, that you see me in right now. I was literally holed up in this room for a year, 12-hour days, making this movie, and I put in the music and the special effects and the titling and all of that. That was just me on my... on a gaming computer.
Right. And that's why I tipped my cap to you. You have this scene in the movie, and I think you know which one it is, where you have a young man looking to the sky. The sky opens up and it's the cosmos, yeah, right? It's in, yeah, the clouds part and the cosmos is there. And it's an absolutely beautiful scene.
Isn't it? I remember it is. I know exactly the scene you're talking about, and it just blew me away. I mean, you have to understand that in especially in the early going, I had to work with AI over and over and over for it to catch my vision, because I had a vision for this movie, and I had to communicate that to the AI. And a year ago, believe it or not, it was like the horse and buggy. People may not believe that, but these AI generators are brand new. I was just fortunate enough to literally get in at the ground level with that inkling that I had in February. But, once you, and I want to choose my words carefully here, but you develop, it's like collaborating with a human being, except you're mm-hmm. collaborating with an alien form of intelligence, because that's really the way I see AI.
Yeah.
AI, for whatever it is you think about it, it's an alien form of intelligence. Right. And so you need to understand how it speaks, how it understands, how it processes. And that took me some months. But once I developed a rapport with my AI collaborators, which is what I call them, they were my and are my AI collaborators. Mm-hmm. Then I was able to extract from them things that were much closer to my vision than they were early capable of achieving early on. But Tim, and this is the beautiful part, there were days when I not only got my vision realized, but my vision took the AI took it to the next level. It just blew me away, including that one scene. And it was just like, wow, yes, that's what I couldn't even picture it that beautiful. And it was moments like that that I lived for, and I still do, because I'm planning on doing some follow-up stuff with AI. I'm just sold on it. It's fantastic.
Are you finding the more you work with it, the more intuitive it's becoming with you? It's working more lockstep with you?
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing I'm learning too, Tim, is, you know, now there are many AI generators. I mean, now you have Sora and you have Grok and you have Gemini and you have on and on, Hailuo. And I mean, there's dozens and dozens of AI generators. And one of the things, not only have they become more intuitive for me, but I know which one to go to if I want a particular effect.
Right.
So Gemini might be better at one thing. Sora might be another better at something else. Kling might be something. And then you have 11 Labs, which is very good at synthesizing voices. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. The technology, I almost see myself as like a pianist, and I have this keyboard of AI generators of all kinds, whether it's text to video, image to video, video to video, you know, whether it's audio, whether it's imaging or whatever. And I am now in a position where I think I don't want to say I've mastered the piano.
Yeah.
But I'm very close to mastering the piano, and I'm much faster at it now than I was initially when I was just learning from scratch. But I'm excited about this movie because honestly, I made my previous movie, Little Red Wagon, which you referenced in the introduction, and mm-hmm. yeah, it did really well, Lionsgate and the whole nine yards. And I thought, yeah, it was going to be rinse and repeat. I thought I would just be doing that again with this movie. But I just feel so excited that not only is this, I'm just so proud of this movie, and I'm just so delighted that you liked it.
Yes, I did.
But I'm so excited that I was able to just do it on my computer. And I think what the message to others, the people who are watching and listening right now, Tim, is you can do that too. It's what I call the power of one. That I think, yes, AI has dark sides, no question about it, and I've written about them mm-hmm. there, and they're to be taken seriously. But there are tremendous upsides, and this is one of them, where I feel like AI unleashed the creativity in me like nothing else has ever done. You know, sometimes you work with a collaborator and they'll bring out the best in you. They'll bring mm-hmm. out the best creative person in you.
Yeah.
Well, this AI has done that for me. And I just feel so empowered. And I think anybody who watches this movie can say to themselves, well, if Dr. G can do it, I can do it too. Because I knew zero about AI generators.
There you go.
So I hope that people will be inspired not only by my story, and not only be stunned by the visuals, but they will feel empowered by what they see.
Excellent. Excellent. Let me switch gears with you here real quick, Dr. G. We're at a crux point, I think, in American culture right now, in that President Trump recently said he wanted to release all the files. We're going to know everything there is to know about UAPs, UFOs. It may be the government's version of it, but we're going to get everything that they have, supposedly, and they're going to let the American people know soon enough what it is that they have. In your movie, you bring up Fermi and Fermi's paradox, which we're familiar with on the show. We've done shows about it. We brought it up in different ways. So our audience is familiar with Fermi. And you, without being too spoilerish here about the movie, I don't want to be too spoilerish about it. But
yeah, don't give it away.
No, I won't give it away. Do bring it up. You do present it in the movie, and you feature it very strongly. I want to ask you this: is there room in this universe to say, you know what, this universe may have been created for us and be special for us? Yet, is there still life out there that's visiting us here? And if there isn't life that's visiting us here, what is it that the government is going to report to us eventually that is flying around in our airspace?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I do. I take on this subject head on in the movie because in my journey, I was fortunate enough when I was a grad student to have Carl Sagan and Frank Drake as my professors. And I suspect your viewers know about these two people. They are the founders of SETI. Mm-hmm. I mean, Frank Drake was on my thesis committee, my PhD thesis committee. And Carl, I took classes in exobiology from both Carl and Frank. I learned about the Drake's equation directly from Frank. I'm so sorry that they're both dead now. I mean, these men had just an enormous impact on my life. And I was at Cornell just as Carl was becoming famous, when he was at the Tonight Show and he was getting ready to do Cosmos. I had a front row seat in the making of Cosmos. I got to know the executive producer, Adrian Malone.
Oh, wow.
He was a British guy. Sadly, he and Carl ended up locking horns. But I had many a conversation with Adrian and Carl. I got to know him quite well. I had a lot of respect for him. I still do. And so it was with that as background. Now, yes, in the movie. So I bring all of that experience and exposure to the subject to bear on this movie that I've just made. And in my journey, you know, I explain again, I don't want to give away the movie, but I explain how the universe appears to be made for life. Now, it could just, that could be the end of it right there, that there, every indication is that the universe, and this is, again, incontrovertible, whether you're an atheist or not, and the facts are the facts, and that the universe is made for life to exist. Mm-hmm. And it is so unlikely for that to have been the case, the odds, and I quote the odds in the movie, that you have to ask yourself, if you're any kind of an honest person, you have to ask yourself, okay, is this a coincidence? And yes, of course, there is the possibility that it is, but the odds are so infinitesimal. It takes a lot of faith to believe that it's a coincidence. It appears quite likely that it was intentional. Okay, so that opens up a whole Pandora's box, right?
Right.
If the universe is intentionally made for life, then the secondary question is, well, it's certainly made for life as we know it, so, you know, carbon-based life with DNA and all the rest of it. But is it also made for life as we don't know it? In other words, maybe silicon-based life or other forms of carbon-based life or forms of life that we can't even imagine or name. And I wanted to tackle that question. And so this is where I really drew on my experience with this subject, going back to Frank and Carl's influence on me, because what I learned in his class was, yeah, there are different forms of life. I remember my first, in fact, the first day of class I had, it was either Frank or Carl, I can't remember, asked us the question, well, what is life? And, you know, we're grad students, we're sitting there and we're like, okay, we think we know what it is. And he says, so for example, is a crystal a form of life? After all, it replicates. A crystal replicates. So if your criterion for a life form is that it can replicate or reproduce, there it is. And so he drew us deeper and deeper into this fascinating subject, right? So I, when I was at ABC News as a science editor for 14 years, I interviewed a lot of people who said or reported that they had seen. I went to New Mexico. I went to Area 51, I took it seriously. In other words, and by the way, I took a lot of heat from people who call themselves skeptics, mm-hmm. but I don't think they're skeptics. I think they're just very close-minded people.
Cynics, is that a good way to put it?
Yeah. You know, and you know, they use the word skeptic because I guess it's a kind of a conceit and makes them feel better that I'm not close-minded. I'm skeptical. Well, and I got a lot of heat for that, for interviewing these people, putting them on the air, Good Morning America, Nightline, all of World News Tonight. In fact, I remember, McKay was his last name. He was a scientist at NASA. He claimed to have found evidence for life in a Mars rock. Remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
And it was a huge national story. Well, I flew to Houston and I was the only reporter to be allowed to touch the rock. And it was because, you know, I was a scientist, not just a reporter. And by then I had developed a really good rapport with NASA. They trusted me to tell the story. But I did a World News Tonight with Peter Jennings on that Mars rock. So what I'm saying to you and your listeners and your watchers is that I take this subject seriously. I don't poo-poo it like so-called skeptics or close-minded people, because the universe is made for life. Period. That's the first main statement. Then the question becomes, well, is it made just for us? And that's a separate question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Frank was talking to us about the Drake equation, and I can't remember exactly the conclusion he came to, but I he did the whole calculation, and it went over more than just one class. It was like a week long. And he finally came to the conclusion, he put in all the factors into the Drake equation, and he did the calculation, and I think he came out with the number one. So the Drake equation at that time, this is, you know, a couple decades ago,
right?
I'm not 20-something anymore.
Neither am I.
But his conclusion at that point was that, yeah, the Drake equation predicts that we should expect maybe one life form per galaxy. I seem to recall that was the conclusion. And we're all like, okay, cool, that's fine. Most of us grad students were open-minded. We're all scientists, mm-hmm. so we're meant to be open-minded, right? We have to be open-minded. And otherwise, you can't be a good scientist. If you close your mind like a steel trap, you're not a scientist. Then you become, I don't know what, you become a dogmatic person. You become some kind of a zealot. I interviewed. I remember going to New Paltz, New York, which has got the reputation for being one of the most the places in the United States where there are most UFO sightings. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah.
But that's New Paltz, New York. That's upstate New York.
Okay.
And I remember pulling an all-nighter. I went there with people who claimed to have been abducted or have had encounters of various kinds with the aliens. And again, I took it seriously. I never ridicule people. I don't believe in that. I think that if I've learned anything as a scientist, it's that we live in a universe filled with mystery, and we ourselves are filled with mystery. So I'm not about to ridicule anything that's within the realm of possibility. And so, we stayed up all night with our cameras, and we were, I remember, on a cliff of some kind. We were on a high promontory overlooking New Paltz, so we had a clear view of the night sky. It was actually beautiful. It was dramatic, and we didn't see anything, unfortunately, but I still interviewed the people. I put it on ABC News. I mean, this is national television I'm doing. This is not some local station.
Right, right.
I'm giving these people a national platform, and I was putting my reputation on the line by doing that.
Yeah.
But I felt justified. Again, in the name of science, I just ask tough questions, demand honest answers. Well, how are you going to find honest answers unless you do the digging, right?
Right.
So I was just disappointed, unfortunately, that I never... Of all the people I interviewed, they never really coughed up the goods, you know, and I gave them a chance to. I traveled to wherever they were, and I sat down, I interviewed them. They made all kinds of claims, and I took them seriously. But whenever I asked them, I want to show it. There was always some excuse of some kind. So that was a little disappointing to me. And then these folks at Oxford University came out with a study where they used a kind of a Bayesian reasoning, which is that, let's say back when I was a grad student, there were certain odds that aliens existed somewhere in the world, somewhere in the universe, right?
Okay.
Now we have searched and searched and searched and searched and searched, and nothing, or apparently nothing. There may be something the government is hiding and will reveal, and that I'm all for that. I can't wait.
Okay.
I hope it's not another nothing burger. That's my worry, because I've been so disappointed so many times in the past, Tim. I'm just like, can somebody please?
Right.
Somebody please show me an alien. I want to see an alien, you know?
Mine too, right.
I want to get on board an alien ship. I want to be abducted. It's like, where did Gillen go? Oh, be careful. That's more right. But no, seriously, I mean, I think that would be my most awesome trip of my lifetime, right? To be abducted by aliens. I think it would be awesome. But these Oxford University researchers, you know, reevaluated Drake's equation, all the evidence, all the studies that have been done, all the SETI studies that have been done that have come up empty-handed, and so forth and so on. And they conclude that, you know, it's likely that we're alone in the universe, which is a pretty profound conclusion. And, you know, I take them seriously, but I still I'm open-minded. I still think, yeah, I mean, there absolutely there could be life out there. I don't think this certainly doesn't conflict with anything I believe right now, either as a Christian or as a scientist. If there was an alien that came into my office right now and it says, excuse me, Dr. G, I don't mean to interrupt you and Tim Dennis, but I need to speak to you urgently. I'll be like, okay, I'll be right there. Bye, Tim.
I would let you go do it too. And I'd make
but
sure
you get what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying, that, you know, as a scientist, I have to stay grounded in the truth, right? Otherwise, you know, I'm just, you know, another flake. I have to stay grounded in the truth, but at the same time, I'm just well aware of the enormous mystery that exists in the universe. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if there were aliens. And by the way, I remember doing a segment with Frank Drake. I think your viewers will be interested in this story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he confided in me, and I'm not giving away any top secret or anything like that, but he told me off camera that he helped the government, how do I want to say, draft the protocol for announcing that an alien form of life has been discovered.
Really?
That he's crafted the press release, he's crafted what the president should say and all this sort of thing, but it was all done on the QT. But he shared some of that with me, and it was pretty sobering. Yeah. Huh. So the government is ready. In other words, what Frank was telling me is that the government is ready to make the announcement if and when the evidence justifies it. So yeah, I don't think this is a closed book by any means. I don't think this is a closed book by any means at all. But I just want to see the goods. Please, somebody out there, show me the goods.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
let me ask you this, Dr. G, and then we'll close the book here on aliens, and we'll get to the other side here. If in the interest of making maybe, and this would probably be your one last documentary. You mentioned an alien coming into the room, and of course, I'd let you go do your thing if that were the case. But if the government were to come out, let's say in July, because this is the rumor, this is when this announcement's going to come, right around the time of the Roswell anniversary. If they were to come out and say, "All right, you got us. We've had an arrangement with them all along. We've been in a relationship with them since Roswell. We're going to take one journalist and allow them to document and ask any questions. They can go with them. They can take a camera. They can make one movie. They can send it back, but they're not coming back."
Oh. I would still do it.
They can send one legacy movie back, and they can learn whatever secrets they want to learn about the universe.
I'm your man.
You're going?
I would. And I'll tell you why. You know, if you look at my history as a reporter, I was told that it would be impossible to do a live shot from the Antarctic to the North American continent, that you couldn't bounce a signal off from down under all the way up to the North American continent. I made it happen. I made history in Nightline. I did the history's first live shot from the Antarctic to the North American continent. I was also the first correspondent to report from the wreck of the Titanic at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Almost lost my life, actually. And you know, part of that story is in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And here again with this movie, I believe that I'm the first person who's made a full-length motion picture using consumer-level AI tools on my desktop by my lonesome. And so I don't know what I guess what I'm telling you is that I'm just wired to do things others have never done before. There's just a kind of boldness in me, and maybe that's what makes me a good scientist. I'm not reckless. I mean, I'm not like, who was that guy that would jump the canyons and all that?
Evil Knievel.
Evil Knievel. Yeah, I'm not an Evil Knievel, believe me, and I'm afraid of heights anyway. But I'll tell you something else. When I was at ABC News, I was covering the space program for ABC News. Mm-hmm. So I got to know the astronauts really well. I got to know NASA very well. And remember when the Challenger was starting to launch and they did the teacher, Krista McAuliffe?
Yeah.
They unfortunately, you know, what happened there. But they were NASA was embarking on a series of launches where they wanted to take civilians up there along with the astronauts, mm-hmm. right? And the first one was a teacher. Oh, okay, we're going to put a teacher into the mix. The next one was what? A reporter.
Yeah.
That was going to be next. And all the astronauts that I would see at NASA would say, "You're in, Michael. You're the guy. You're going to be the one. You're going to be the first reporter into space." And I said, man, I even went down to Huntsville, Alabama, down there to the NASA facility where they have trainings and all that sort of thing. They gave me a jumpsuit, a whole nine yards. I was ready to go. And they all said the same thing. Every time I would run into an astronaut, they'd say, "Michael, you're in. We put your name in the hat." And then Krista goes, and sadly, you know, the Challenger gets blown up and the whole program just comes to a screeching halt. So I guess, again, I'm telling you that I've just been, for whatever reason, I've always had the great good fortune of being able to do these firsts. And the one you just described, I would do it. I'd have to check with my wife. She probably wouldn't like the idea. But my gosh, are you kidding me? Oh my God, that is just, that's just too that would be the scoop of a lifetime. At that point, I could die in peace. And I believe God would understand. I mean, sure. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it would be the ultimate sacrifice for humanity. And not only that, but to, and it's not an ego thing. It's simply to serve humanity and to answer questions that I think we all have had, right?
I've always been a curious kid. You know, I remember a middle school teacher calling me Michael Jillian because I asked a jillion questions. I've always just been a curious kid, always asking questions. And I think your assignment would be like the ultimate man to be able to answer that question. And I would have confidence in myself as a scientist and as a reporter to be able to send back that one last movie where I can inform humanity about what that's like. And it would be honest, like my movie, and it would be no spin. It would just be, you know, the facts, but told in a way that people could understand and appreciate and be inspired by. And that's what my whole career has been about. So, yeah, can you sign me up, please, Tim? Put me at the top of the list for that.
You're the first one on the list. And this time it's for real. You're the first one on the list.
Thank you. I'm going to hold you to that, brother. I'm going to hold you to that. Okay?
I'll talk to whoever in the administration I can talk to get you the first on the list for that one.
My wife's not going to let me talk to you ever again. That's okay. Well, you and I can still talk behind the scenes.
That's right. Just a couple of quick ones before I let you go today, Dr. G.
Yeah.
In the movie, you bring up an interesting thing that I connected two and two by myself on this. And that was the idea that psychic powers may really be a quantum phenomenon. And you did it with Kepler. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. In the movie, I talk about various quantum phenomena that absolutely defy logic and defy our imagination. And one of them is called quantum entanglement. And I illustrate it with this cute little thing with my dog. I don't want to give it away, but I show a little experiment with my dog, Kepler. And the gist of it is that if you look at classical physics, certainly classical, but even modern physics, pre-quantum mechanics. So say physics through, 1910, 1920, okay? The idea was that nothing could travel faster than the speed of light. We could not communicate any faster than the speed of light. But quantum entanglement absolutely demolishes that shibboleth. And we now know, and we've done experiments with quantum entanglement, that it's real. It's a real phenomenon. It's not pie in the sky. It's not theoretical. It's been demonstrated over and over and over again. Quantum entanglement enables communication between two remote or two widely separated objects. Typically, the experiments we do are with atoms. But two atoms that are widely separated by miles can communicate instantaneously. It's almost like they're communicating, with their minds. It's almost like mind communication of some kind.
Yeah.
So I can see where you would draw that inference. I didn't want to go that step. Again, this movie is not about telling you what I think or what I think is possible. But the movie is all about, hey, this is what modern science has discovered. What do you make of it? I mean, it's kind of crazy, right?
That's automatically where my mind goes.
Yeah. And it's reasonable. It's absolutely reasonable that there is a form of instantaneous communication between two widely separated objects.
So
now somebody might argue, well, it's only true on the atomic level, Dr. G. Well, no, because for one thing, we have now demonstrated the quantum entanglement happens over long distances. I haven't checked recently with the everybody keeps trying to break the world's record. The Japanese, I think, had the world's record, like a year or two ago. I haven't checked recently. But but they're missing the point when they say that, because we now know there are many quantum phenomena that actually have macroscopic consequences. So it's not at all unreasonable to speculate that even though this is, yes, technically a quantum phenomenon, that it manifests at the macroscopic level. That's not at all a huge leap of faith. So yeah, this again opens up, what this reveals to us is a universe that is far more mysterious than we ever believed possible. And the thing is, Tim, the more we inquire of the universe, the more we look into it, the deeper the mystery. It's not like we're eliminating the mystery, because I think a lot of people maybe even 100, 200 years ago would have thought, ah, yeah, you know, all that stuff you believe, wait until science gets its hands on it. And, you know, they'll dispel the mystery, they'll dispel the myth. But actually, just the opposite is true. You know, it's like when you have a coin that gets stuck between two cushions, mm-hmm. and you go look, you know, you put your hand into the between the cushions, you go after the coin, and the coin just always just slips further down into the. That's kind of how science works. That when we're seeking an answer to a question, it opens up more questions, and we just find ourselves getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the mystery. That's for me the exciting part of science, and that's part of what this movie is all about, to make people appreciate the depth of the mystery of the universe.
If I can connect a few dots for you here, Dr. G, this is what got me going kind of down a quick rabbit hole for you. I don't go down deep rabbit holes. I go down very shallow ones, and then I let the audience decide.
Good.
As I was watching the movie and I got to quantum entanglement, it got me thinking this. And this is why I wanted to bring up the second part of the subject, which is heaven a quantum field? And this has been brought up by science before. In fact, this I saw it in Popular Mechanics. That it was a huge article in Popular Mechanics. And the fact that science was already starting to study the fact that heaven itself may be a huge quantum field. The fact that psychics themselves may be connecting to that quantum field and communicating with spirits, which we know from past experiments, scientists have been trying to weigh how much a soul weighs, right? Or trying to figure out how much a soul weighs, meaning that it has some body to it, that there's must be some energy to it, or there must be some mass to it, meaning it has some form, right? Or there is a form there. So if there's some form there, then obviously quantum entanglement should be able to take place, you would think. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes. So first of all, let me tell you, surprise, surprise, that Popular Mechanics article on heaven that you read was actually based on an op-ed in Fox that I wrote.
Really?
If you look at it carefully, they name me in it. Yeah,
oh,
I'm the guy. That article went all over the world. I mean, it went viral. It came out in Fox News about 2 months ago, and I mean, it just blew up. It's everywhere.
Oh, yeah,
everywhere. So we can visit that. Let's set that aside for a moment.
Okay.
I think you're raising, I think, a good point, and that is.
Okay, so I want to bring up one quick thing, and then I'll throw it back to you. And it goes all the way back to when we were talking about, and I'm going to reference this point, about, again, I know you don't like the word proof. I forget what word you used. But going back to the scientific method, and that is, you have psychics out there, and legit psychics, I'll throw legit psychics out there, who 70, 80% of the time can bring up things from relatives that have passed, that can go out and find missing children, that can go out and do these wonderful things with this mm-hmm. gift, that have no idea. They've never connected with people before, but can pull these things from the ether.
Yeah.
And they do it repeatedly.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I did a Nightline show one night. And again, I got a lot of heat from the so-called skeptics community, mm-hmm. the closed-minded community, I call it. But what we did was, I'm trying to remember the exact details, but there was a psychic of some kind, I don't remember exactly what kind, that the CIA was using, that the CIA uses. And we put him to the test. My producer at Nightline, you know, this is a pretty... I mean, this is a very solid show. This is not a flaky show. This is not like Oprah or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is Nightline, and we were all very serious-minded people. But we just wanted, again, I just wanted to know. I'm not saying I endorse it. I'm just saying, I just want to know. I'm curious. I want to ask tough questions and demand honest answers. So my producer arranged for either she hired some artists to draw some things on sheets of paper. I think there were maybe as many as half dozen. Put them into a manila envelope, put it into another manila envelope, maybe put it into a third manila envelope, sealing it every time, right? And I mean, and then entrusted it to some third party that we knew was above reproach, right? That no hanky panky. And so we taped it. I remember interviewing him and I said, all right. And we were sitting, as I recall, we were sitting at a desk. And I said to him, all right, well, are you ready? And he said, yes, I'm ready. And he's like, you know, middle-aged man, very nothing flaky. He wasn't like Karnak, the magician, or what. You know, it was just, seemed like a serious guy. And he says, yes, I'm ready. I said, okay, well, tell me what is in the first picture in the envelope. And he's like thinking of it. And he started, drew something, set it aside. I said, okay, second and third and fourth and fifth, we did it. And then we unsealed the envelopes. And doggone it if he didn't nail it every time.
Yeah.
And so that, again, I'm not jumping to any conclusions. So you, for you out skeptics out there, don't send me nasty letters. Honestly, I don't care at this point. Yeah, I don't care. Say whatever you want. But I'm not endorsing any one theory or hypothesis about what's going on. I just keep coming back to the same thing, Tim, and that is this. My beloved science, not psychics, not religious kooks, not science is asking me to believe in things that are just out of this world. The quantum vacuum, black holes, virtual particles, dark matter, dark energy, these are all very deep mysteries. We have no clue of what they are. We have no idea what dark matter is. We have no idea what dark energy is. We talk about virtual particles, which are real and yet not real. I spoke about the quantum vacuum, which is everything and yet nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, so when somebody comes along and says to me, hey, you know, I can communicate across long distances simultaneously, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, maybe. So, you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
In other words,
right.
What I'm saying is that it was science that broadened my worldview. It was science that inflated my worldview from that tiny worldview I started as a boy to now where it's like, okay, I get it. We are mysterious creatures inhabiting a very mysterious universe. So if within that mystery, two people can communicate through a way that is not electromagnetic or acoustic or in some, you know, conventional way, to me, that's like not any big whoopee. The only reason it's a big whoopee is because if you have a closed mind, you say, oh, that's impossible. That's impossible. That's impossible. Well, you're the one making the drama. I mean, you're the one who is making the commotion. I just take it in stride. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's one more thing in this mysterious universe of ours that we need to understand, that we need to explain. Are we alone or not alone? I mean, these are huge questions. And I just object to somebody browbeating anybody who even just raises the question like you do. Like, you know, even if you raise the question, there's some people who just go a flutter. I mean, they lose it. They just freak out and they call you every name in the book. You're a lowbrow, you're a flake, you're this and that. It's like, chill out.
Yeah.
Chill out. There are many things in this vast and wonderful universe of ours that we don't understand. One final little story about Carl.
Sure.
I remember he was giving a lecture at Cornell once. It was a packed auditorium. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, he used, he was wrapping things up and he talked about the awe and majesty of the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the Q&A session afterwards, this stuffed shirt of a professor stands up and he says, Professor Sagan, how dare you use words like awe and majesty. These are not scientific terms. You should not be using words like awe and majesty to describe the universe. And it's like, and I sat there as a grad student thinking to myself, who are you? What's your problem? And it's because that professor, I'm sure, had this tiny little worldview that didn't allow for awe and majesty. Well, guess what? My worldview allows for a lot of awe and majesty. I've experienced it. I've tried to capture some of that in the movie. And I hope to share that with the people who watch the movie. And I hope that when they do watch the movie, they too will see the awe and majesty of the universe, not only out there, but the universe within us. We are ourselves a very deep mystery.
Well, I know I did. I was awed. There was a lot of majesty there. And like I said, I saw it twice, Dr. G. So I caught on to a lot of different concepts and a lot of concepts that got me thinking. And I think our audience is going to be thinking as well once they see this movie. There's a lot of things that are going to enlighten them, maybe even change a lot of things that they think about. And it's all done through science, which is
science.
Yeah, it's all science. So I think that's refreshing in itself. The Invisible Everywhere, Believing is Seeing, is going to be available April 8th at theinvisibleeverywhere.com. We have a link in the description of this program. Dr. Gillen, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Tim. Let's do it again. And remember, I'm top of the list, okay?
Top of the list, man. I'm telling you. I will talk to any and everybody I know and have you right there. Should they in July say, you know what, we've had a relationship all along, and Dr. G is in there and he's going. He's just got to get the wife's permission, but hey, it shouldn't be a problem. But you know what, he's going with, and he's going to make the movie of a lifetime.
It's a deal, and it's been a pleasure. God bless you, my brother. Hope we can do it again.
Pleasure is all mine, my brother. I appreciate you so much. And hey, you know what? Maybe we'll have to have you back and just talk quantum stuff. And maybe even quantum afterlife and the different realms that may exist. I think that would be a fascinating conversation.
That's a deal. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it. Definitely. Folks, it is the end of the week. I want to remind you, our sponsor today was Jelly Bean and Julia's. They're over there in Coon Rapids. Tomorrow is the smoked prime rib dinner, which is amazing. Along with that tequila berries salad, the sweet and tangy dressing on there alone is going to blow you away. Again, they have the 16-ounce, the 18-ounce prime rib. Go check it out tomorrow night. It is there until it's gone. They start serving at 4:30. JellybeanandJulias.com. Check it out. The link is in the description of this program. JellybeanandJulias.com in Coon Rapids. All right. With the weekend, a couple of things for you. One, True Crime Tuesday and Darkness Radio swag is available in the shop at darknessradioshow.com. Two, the Apple app is being updated right now, should be available in the update next week. So check that out. And as always, we're on the weekend and boy, we're going to have nice weather. That means spring cleanup. That means things that need to be done around the house, spring cleanup there as well. Be sure to look after either an elderly or disabled member of your family or your community. Be sure to be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Go look after an elderly member or a disabled member of your family or community, please. A message from your friends here at Darkness Radio. For Jessica Freeberg, for Mally Fox, for Travis Thorpe, for Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for continuing to watch and listen to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Coming crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.